It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18+. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
HudsonRiverRadio.com. It beats listening to nothing.
It's Frank.
My goodness, it's Frank.
Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank.
Hello and welcome to Being Frank, where the only way to be is, well, Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobono, and we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Intelligent Conversation Podcast. We know that your time is valuable and competition is fierce. Yeah, there are a lot of podcasts out there. But we like to think of ourselves as an alternative to all that noise. So we really appreciate you sharing some of your day with Being Frank. You know, we stream from HudsonRiverRadio.com in beautiful and historic Stony Point, New York, where the mailman, because he always delivers, Mr. Neil Richter, is our engineer. But that's just our so-called home base. Remember, you can download us wherever and whenever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That includes iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, Spreaker, and all the others. You can find the links on our Hudson River Radio Facebook page. It's public. Please think about becoming a subscriber and leaving us a comment, too. We also have our own website, HudsonRiverRadio.com. If you go to the site and click on the Being Frank link, you'll be able to listen to any of our podcasts at any time. If you like the program, please consider sharing it with family and friends. Being Frank brings our audience a new topical program every week, beginning on Thursdays. Listen at your convenience. And remember, every program is archived, so you can listen to any Being Frank virtually any time that you want to. We think it's the intelligent thing to do. We're taping on June 8th. Is it 8th or 9th? Let me check the calendar. It's June 8th. That gives you some relevance as the program, as we said, is archived. To say that race has played a role in American society since its very inception would be a gross understatement. So much of what we are as a country is colored, well, by color. In the 400-plus years since African slaves were first imported to the nascent Jamestown settlement in what would become Virginia, we have struggled to either completely create or even manage a truly equitable society. Certainly strides have been made, but at the cost of hundreds of thousands of American lives. Remember the Civil War? And African Americans continue to struggle with burdens simply not experienced by white folk in almost every significant social category. Yet the African American experience is rich in history, American history. Few modern Americans can trace their connection to this country for more generations than those of African descent or have contributed more to its growth. Despite the efforts of many bigoted state legislatures to censure the efforts to truly understand our history and the role that race continues to play in it, there are those who will not be silenced and will always tell their stories. Joining us is now such a man. He's been a guest before, and we welcome back Mr. Wilbur Aldrich, a regional director for the NAACP based here in Nyack. Mr. Aldrich, thank you for joining us once again on Being Frank.
Thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here.
I want to talk a little bit about the history. You know, I in my preamble, if you will, a lot to cover there. But African Americans have made a tremendous amount of created a tremendous amount of history in America, and it's often lost or misplaced. One of the efforts to recover some of that history is through the holiday known as Juneteenth. Could you please explain to us what is the history behind that, the date, and what is its significance today?
All right, Juneteenth is a historical event because it marks the last group of African Americans who were informed that they were free. And this occurred in Texas. As you know, we did not have telephones, telegraph, or internet, or any of that kinds of thing during that period in our history. So therefore, everything was done by word of mouth. So it took almost 10 years for that information to get to all of the slaves in Texas to know that they're free. The significance is, until we're all free, none of us are free. So at that point, that meant that those people in Texas joined all of the other numerous numbers of African Americans throughout this country who knew that they were free and then had to make a choice to whether to leave their masters or stay under different circumstances, but remained where they were. So that's the last group. That's the significance. For us, the significance is that we don't want to forget, nor do we want to leave anyone behind as far as making sure that equality is there for everyone.
Now, people think of the Emancipation Proclamation signed by President Abraham Lincoln in 1863, if my memory serves me correctly. But in a sense, until the war was won, it really was just a piece of paper if people were not to observe it. And again, a price was paid, a toll was paid in blood. And it's amazing that it still took 10 years. And even with the significance of, again, words, in practice, obviously it's taken even so much longer, particularly in the South, but everywhere in this country, in terms of elevating people of color, particularly African Americans, to a level of equality. So I think that, and today, it's a theme that I want to get into a little bit later on, there seems to be a movement to squash some of that history. And I'm not sure why. Why are people afraid of the truth? I mean, the truth is of the Emancipation Proclamation. The truth is that it took 10 years for all the slaves to be truly free. Why are so many people afraid to share that as it is the truth? It makes us whole in terms of what we are. No one is perfect. No country is perfect. So why should we hide the truth? Your feelings.
Well, the Emancipation Proclamation was, you're correct, just a document. But as you know, the Constitution starts with we the people. At that point in time, African Americans were not considered people. We were one third of a person. So therefore, we the people really did not apply to African Americans. That only applied to white folks and mainly European folks. Why are we so reluctant? Because we are very comfortable discussing the Holocaust. No one says we can't talk about that. We don't want to discuss that at all. That's not, I mean, you do have some crazy people that say it didn't happen, but we don't have a problem discussing it. The reason I believe we have a problem discussing anything pertaining to discrimination, racism, or race in general, is because that's a stain on the flag of America. And we want it to appear that we've always been the perfect people. Certainly done nothing to anyone that would be to the extent of slavery is there. So therefore, if we can quell the discussion, then in essence, it didn't happen. And we all know it did. So, I mean, it's only there's a minority group of people who I think fall into that category that don't believe slavery happened. But there are those that really just don't want to discuss it. And we are very quick to say, or some people are very quick to say, well, that has nothing to do with me because I didn't have slaves. But many of your ancestors did. And if acknowledging a wrong is one way of correcting a wrong.
You know, Mr. Olds, it's a perfect segue into my next question. And it's been hotly debated. And I think it fits right into our discussion, and that is reparation. Okay, there are many people, not only African Americans, but other whites as well, who feel that certainly some institution owe monetary amounts, literally, their success, their growth to the labor of slaves. And it's time to compensate the descendants of those people properly for the work that was taken from them to build some of these institutions. Of course, that's a controversial point of view for many people. The argument on the other side that even I could make as a second generation American, where my family only came in the early part of the 20th century, so obviously we're not directly involved, but I understand as a society, we use things that are built and were built literally on slave labor. How do we compensate for that? What are your thoughts on reparation?
My thoughts are all over the place when it comes to reparations.
Okay, well, you have the floor and as much time as you need.
Please, it's all over the place. I firmly believe that some sort of payment should be made to African American descendants who were captive and enslaved and did all the work to develop this country. Mm-hmm. Some sort. What that is, I'm not really sure. Does it have to be monetary? I'm not sure. Does it have to be something else? Yes. Well, if you've acknowledged and the country has acknowledged and apologize for slavery, then in that essence, you then are obliged to do something to assist those who were put at a disadvantage because of that. And the reason I say that is because slavery ended, Blacks continued to work, and did, yes, they were paid in many instances after slavery. And I'm talking about way long after slavery, they were given salaries. However, as we know, in many instances, even today, Black folks are not paid at the same rate as white men. So that because of slavery, because of the fact whites owned Blacks, even today, there's the decisive disadvantage to Blacks because of that. In other words, that there is something to be said pertaining to those who have an advantage, which are white people, and those who are put at a disadvantage in many, many different ways, which are Black people, even when it comes to voting. You know, no white person has any obstacles placed in their way to cast their ballot about anything. That can't be said pertaining to people of color as far as voting is concerned, which our democracy is based upon.
You know, Mr. Olds, is a perfect, again, another perfect segue into a term, a specter, if you will, of a term that you hear all the time, and I'm not sure people understand. Would you help us to understand Jim Crow? Where does it come from? What does it mean? You hear it often again that it's reared its ugly head. I'm not sure people actually understand what Jim Crow is. Can you explain it to us and what it means to a Black man?
Jim Crow is the second cousin of slavery. Jim Crow are people who think they are superior to people of color, specifically. Jim Crow is a method of holding someone down and not allowing them to thrive. Now, there are those that will say, but African Americans have made a lot they have been advanced a lot in many, many different ways. That's true in some instances. But that does not mean that they have the same privileges as white people. There are certain privileges that go along with whites that whites believe they have and therefore they receive.
Well, give us an example of, if you will, Jim Crow in practice today, in today's society. Again, you hear it all the time. Can you give us a practical example of how Jim Crow is practiced anywhere in the country?
Oh, many. If you look at many of your boards and committees within the towns throughout Rockland, and throughout the country, in most instances, they are headed, and they're also only white males on those boards. Now, they will allow some white females to come on there, but they don't even. Jim Crow are those people that go in those boardrooms, look around, and everybody in that room looks like them, and nobody says, wait, where are the people of color? That's Jim Crow.
So, in other words, they're saying it's not necessarily illegal for blacks to be there. They're just not welcome there and they're not there. In other words, it's a system that perpetuates itself. We didn't say you couldn't come. Of course, you're not welcome here, but we didn't say you didn't come. So it's sort of like done, if you will, under the table. Is that
you're
a fair
absolutely
assessment?
Right. I'll give you an example. I've been in this business for almost 60 years of dealing with racism and discrimination and trying to ensure that people are treated fairly. Only this in the past month, for the first time, did I receive a call from a Caucasian male asking me, is there a reason that people of color, specifically black people, are not in the American Legion? Do they have their own group instead of, which no, they do not, is the answer. And what my response to him is there a reason that the American Legion has not reached out to blacks and other people of color to secure them coming into their organization? In most instances, when you do not see anyone of color, then that means, in most instances, it will indicate that people of color feel that you don't want them or they're not welcome.
Just fascinating. And it just perfectly segues into my next question, affirmative action. Again, another hotly debated with good, valid points. I believe it might have been 60 Minutes on CBS had a very interesting point because it's being challenged. In many instances, it was challenged at Harvard and many other top schools. And now with the conservative Supreme Court, haven't fully heard all the cases, but are moving in that way. And the gentleman who was fighting against it, again, he makes a good solid point and has had to withstand calls calling him a racist, et cetera. But if you hear his argument, it's a legitimate argument. As they used in a counterbalance, an African-American college professor who then argued for affirmative action and the importance of creating, as you were saying, an environment where minorities are comfortable in being there. But that's their point of view. I need to hear yours. What are your feelings on affirmative action, please?
Well, my point of view is not too far from that gentleman's point of view. The purpose of affirmative action was to assist and develop equality. That was the purpose, to provide an equalness in this country. I do not believe that at this stage in life and in this country that we can say that all things are equal. Affirmative action was one of the ways to be able to ensure that. When we had affirmative action, and I mean real affirmative action, they've kind of dismantled it. However, it really hasn't gone away. But what they took away was any reporting system. So therefore, you have no way of knowing whether you have people of color in positions or not. other than in your little small world that you live in. So affirmative action gave an advantage. Many people in African-Americans would not be in the position that they're in, it's professionally especially, if it was not for affirmative action. And I'll tell you what happened. I worked at Lutchworth Village in the 60s. Mm-hmm. There was not one person of color in the 60s in administration. There was not one person of color on mid-level supervision. In comes affirmative action. When I left, when I transferred from one facility to another, when I left Lutchworth, there were people of color in administration. There were people of color in human resources. There were people of color in mid-level supervisory positions. Ten years passed when they eliminated affirmative action. I don't even know if it's been 10 years. There are now no people of color in administration, very few people on the mid-level. So you tell me whether affirmative action is needed. When they developed committees and boards because of affirmative action, they were required to ensure that people of color were on boards and committees. Once that didn't, there was no longer that requirement, it reverted back to what it was.
I'm sorry, cut you off, please continue.
I think it speaks for itself. Now there are, can you say that there's been no, everything went back? No, I won't say everything went back. However, the majority of those things did. And no one was concerned any longer as to whether people of color were placed in those positions or not. And the disadvantage is to everybody, because now you don't get the view and the opinion of a segment of the population that you do expect to pay taxes and that you claim that you serve. But see, that's that old master syndrome, where I am serving the people, but I'm doing what I want to do as far as the people. I'm not going to ask the people what they want. I'm just presuming to know what they need and want.
For argument's sake, in this particular case, what would you say to someone who says, well, no one is stopping you. The African-American community is not involving itself. No one says they can't. They're just not interested in those positions. What would you say to someone who says something
like that? I'd say, how would you know that? If you have not gone out and attempted to secure people of African descent or Hispanic descent, if you have not made the attempt to ask and secure them to come in, how would you know that they don't want to do it? And the other piece of it is, in most instances, these committees and boards, most people don't know when there are openings or when they're not. No one knows. So therefore that's by design also, because if I don't know that there's an opening, how would I know to come and ask you about it?
You're listening to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Lobono. My special guest this evening with a more intelligent conversation is NAACP Regional Director Wilbur Aldridge. I think it's necessary, Mr. Aldridge, we have to talk about violence in the minority community, particularly gun violence. And I did a little research and I have the statistics. And let me just say they're staggering at the effect that gun violence is happening, particularly in the Black communities. Why? What is driving it? And then ultimately, what can we do about it? Again, I could read the statistics. Believe me, they're just staggering in comparison, once again, to whites and white communities. It's just, again, the great majority of gun violence is with Black people violating other Black people. So what's happening there and what can we do about it?
Listen, I can give you some answers, but if I had the magic bullet for that, I would be wealthy and it would be all over. I don't have that. I can certainly give you some of my thoughts pertaining to it. I will equate the gun violence in the African-American community the same as when the drugs first started coming in this country. Where was it? Where were they deposited? In the African-American community. But it wasn't African-Americans that went out and got the drug, brought them in here, but that's where they were pocketed. Okay. Now, the same is with the guns. The guns are coming and they're using them because somebody is supplying it to them. I don't know of any African-Americans other than Oprah that would have enough money to go out and purchase enough guns to distribute within the African-American community to create this kind of environment. But the use of those things are really stemming from the lack of resources for many of the people that live in those communities. It is not, you don't find, you may hear of it on occasion in communities in the suburb, but not often, you know, not in the same manner, and certainly not to the same extent. What can be done about it? One is we could really, just like we've had the war on drugs, we need a war on weapons. And one of those things would be if Congress would set up some rules, some laws, in which these gun manufacturers could not produce. There is no one that needs an AK, what, seven, whatever the number is, rifle in this country. There's no need for it. The only ones that should have the availability of that are people in the armed forces. But, and they don't, and they won't even, now in this instance, they won't even do it for their own people. If you look at the number of mass shootings in this country, very few of them, if any, have been committed by African-Americans or people of color.
It's an interesting phenomenon. Yes, it is. Yes, until recently.
Very few. We may shoot at each other and in the process injure some people or kill some people, which is...
Well, if I might jump in, because I think it's an important point here, that if we are shocked by the mass shootings, particularly in schools done by whites, and we just talked about this, statistically supports our argument there. But I see it all, if the same kind of carnage that's happening in the Black communities was happening in the white community, don't you think a lot more would be being done to control the violence and the guns and the amount and the power that are available? To me, it's almost as if they're saying, you know, the NRA and as long as you keep in the Black community, just keep supplying all the guns you want because they're out there. If that were the case in the white community, I can't imagine it being the same. Your thoughts?
Well, if you remember, the war on drugs didn't begin until drugs started filtering into the white community. And there started to be white overdoses by white people within the white community. And then there was the war on drugs. Now, I'm not going to say that the war on drugs was successful because I don't believe it was, but there was still an attempt made. Yes, you're right. No, it won't. It probably won't do anything until such time as that starts happening on a regular individual kind of basis rather than just the mass shootings. But it is amazing to me that other folks can't see it. I am not the dimmest bulb on the block, but I'm also not the brightest bulb on the block. So those people that are in Congress are supposed to be intelligent for people who are there to be able to use some foresight and try and get ahead of this. But if you're not willing, if you're gonna, look, that's why I believe there needs to be more reform as far as running for office. If you're taking money from gun lobbyists, obviously you're not going to be able to vote without being biased. And you're going to protect that. So there should be something forbidding the money coming. If it's not money, gifts, you know, whatever it is that you're getting. From any of the gun manufacturers, there should just be outlawed because that's absolutely ridiculous. So that's where the fault of that lies there. Yeah. Now, and you know, there's more than one way to commit genocide. So if I'm not, for every black person I'm knocking off, that's a vote that I don't have to worry about.
Wow. Interesting point. I want your thoughts. Recently, the poet laureate, a beautiful young woman, Amanda Gorman, had her poem banned in Florida. A single parent complained and had the poem banned. Her response, I thought, was beautiful. Your thoughts on that and what's happening there?
This country has gone crazy when it comes to a lot of things. Freedom of speech is only reserved for some people, not everybody. But there's another group that banned that's trying to ban the Bible, you know, because of violence in the Bible. There's another group when did we start banning any kind of material? Are we so afraid of other people's philosophy that ours won't stand up against it? The group in the NAACP, there was a school district that sat tried North Rockland who wanted to bring in an activist. What was her name?
Angela Davis.
Angela Davis.
I remember the story,
The district went ballistic, so they had to pull back. Well, it was young people who wanted her. So the NAACP, NIAC, picked it up and brought Angela Davis. Are we so afraid of someone else's philosophy being told that our philosophy is not good enough? I believe our democracy, our belief in democracy can stand up against anything. I just don't see that one individual's philosophy is not, but my point is, we have gotten to the point that we are so afraid. That's why we don't want to talk about Black history. That's why we don't want to talk about gays, LGBT. That's why we don't want everybody. The only reason I can think of is fearful of what it's going to do to our young people. Well, if you've raised your child and taught your child, I would hope that training could stand up against anything. But you want a reason? That's the reason, because it's all out of fear. Fear of what? I'm not really sure.
Truly intelligent conversation this evening with Regional Director for the NAACP, Wilbur Aldridge. This is Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. As I said, truly intelligent conversation. I'm your host, Frank LeBone. We'll be back with more right after these brief commercial messages. Please don't go anywhere yet.
HudsonRiverRadio.com. Bring a dash of green into your life. Check out The Many Shades of Green with Maxine Margot Rubin and Malcolm Berman. Get informed about environmental issues and current events that affect us all. Pick a shade of green and raise your eco-consciousness with The Many Shades of Green. Available on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You ought to be in movies. Well, at least you should watch movies. The Silver Screen Podcast talks about all aspects of film and entertainment. Current films, old films, how movies are made, and interviews with movie makers, authors, and musicians, too. Check out the Silver Screen Podcast at HudsonRiverRadio.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And go watch a movie.
HudsonRiverRadio.com.
Welcome back to Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. I'm your host, Frank Livorno. Tonight's more intelligent conversation with our guest, NAACP Regional Director Wilbur Aldridge. As I said, truly intelligent conversation. Remember, you got a fresh show from us every week beginning on Thursday night, and you can catch us wherever you get your favorite podcasts and listen to us anytime because all of our programs are archived. All right, let's get back to our intelligent conversation. Mr. Aldridge, you made a very good point, I thought, just before the break, too, talking about how things are connected, where we lose rights in one area. First, it may be African-Americans, people of color, then it's LGBT, et cetera. With that in mind, and the connection, if you will, towards a truly equitable society, what's your feeling towards the migrants and how they've been handled in general in the country, but also in particular here in Rockland County, as a state of emergency was declared, preventing them from coming to a place in the county? It has been since overturned by a state court, and it's still being argued. But I'd like to know what your feeling is, especially from an organization like yours, which is really there to help people, all people. What are your feelings?
All right, my feelings are different. The organization, the NAACP, took no stance on this at all. And the reason for that being that we are a firm believer in things. You need a plan. You know, when you do things haphazardly, people get hurt. And while we firmly believe in the equal rights of every citizen, we're talking about people who are not citizens and versus the rights of people who are. In some instances, my concern is that there was never a plan. New York City signed an agreement and established themselves as a sanctuary city. Mm-hmm. But that's all they did. They didn't do anything in preparation for the possibility of people coming. And that's where their hand lies, and neither did the federal government. Right. And therein lies where the problem lies. And these poor individuals have been caught in the middle of this. My feeling is, since they're here, the person to blame for most of this would be the governor from Texas, because he shifted those people out knowing that no one was going to be prepared for the number of people that they had. The other thing's very interesting is, initially when he started sending them out, he only sent them to cities where there were Black mayors.
Interesting. Yes. Yes. Now that you mention it, that's true. That's factual.
But we don't have it, but there's no racism here.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Now, but once they're there, Mayor Adams then gets punished or criticized because these people are here and he's trying to help. What was he supposed to do? What alternative did he have to sending them to Rockland, Orange, or wherever? Some of them. He didn't put them all in a bus and send all of them here. He was trying to just spread it out so that the people would have a place to sleep, eat, bathe, and was going to pay for it. So are we saying that there was nothing? Let me give you an example, and this is real simplistic. When they had the war over in, the war started in Ukraine, mm-hmm. people were flown into America from Ukraine, and people took them in. Now that's immigrants coming in, right?
Mm-hmm.
No one said that they didn't belong here. Now, and they did not come in through the normal channels.
Mm-hmm.
So now, when it's people of color who are coming in, all of a sudden, you don't belong here. and your criminals and rapists and all kinds of labels were placed upon these people who probably have done none of that. Certainly the majority of them hadn't. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference? Where is the difference? I don't know where the difference is other than color.
Well, I was going to say, you and I both know, and being the descendants of dark people, Sicilian immigrants, who had their own share of prejudice because they were among the dark races, it always seems to be the darker races that bear the brunt of racism in this country, and I don't understand why. I mean,
But then I go back, and this is not part of what you were saying, but now I'm going to throw it, you brought it up, I'm going to throw it back at you. Those same dark folks that came here and suffered, your folks, then turn and discriminate against people of color.
Right. It's happened, sure.
So what is it about human nature that makes us say, okay, we have to discriminate against somebody. Somebody has to be lower than us.
That I mean, you see the caste system in India, where it's not necessarily unique just to us. Right. Part of the tribal system. Do you belong to our tribe? If you don't, we don't want you. We don't you. Certainly part of the human experience, but it's always been interesting to me how certainly the darker your skin is, the more you seem to be punished for.
That's true.
It's just, especially since all people originate from black people, it's this great, when you stop and you think about it, it makes your head spin.
But I'll say that is the same as within the African-American community. There are people, the darker you are, it's not as prevalent as some in some other communities, such as when you mentioned the Indian community. But the lighter you are, it used to be the quote unquote better. Those were even during slavery, the people that were working in the big house were the light-skinned African-Americans. The dark-skinned African-Americans were relegated to the field. So somewhere in there is this human nature that wants to, somebody has to be better than someone else. And therefore the advantage is given to certain people and not to others.
Are we heading in the right direction? I mean, certainly advances have been made, but it seems every step forward, at least a step and a half, if not two steps backward, it seems that way. What are your thoughts? Are we going in the right direction?
We're going in the right direction because there's room for change, and there has been change. Now, how a change is slow, and people are certainly change is not something that most people adapt to instantaneously. You know, so that's it. I think the years of 45 in the office put us back 20 years in attitudes pertaining to individuals, and people don't realize it. You know, I sit on a zoning board, and there was a community that was trying to open a synagogue, and the comments that were made, the first thing out of the people's mouth when they came to talk about it was, "I'm not prejudiced, but." Yes. Now, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
And comments that were made were the same comments and types of comments that were made when Blacks were moving into all white neighborhoods. So, now, I don't know if they remember it, but I distinctly remember. I've been here for all that. So I remember every bit of it. Every comment that was made was like a pin sticking somewhere on my arms or somewhere, because it was the exact same thing, but do not prejudice.
Yeah, some of my best friends are. That's another catch. Some of my best friends are, but, you know, yeah.
To answer your question, yes, I think we're moving in the right direction. I think it's hard to steer the ship. It's harder to steer the ship in that direction, but it's moving. And those folks are going to have to get used to the fact that it's moving and adapt to the changes that are coming.
Well, you mentioned 45, former President Trump. And since you did, we might as well say it here and now. And I always think of the quote from Martin Luther King, the arc of justice is long, and sometimes it takes a while to get to the end of it. But we were just informed that former President Trump has been criminally indicted and must appear in front of a federal grand jury. I believe it's tomorrow or at some point this week. And of course, as I mentioned, we're taping on the 8th of June. So anyway, a little breaking news at the same time. So it all kind of fits together.
I'm shedding no tears.
Yeah, you and I both. That wasn't necessarily the topic, but we're okay. you know, really, again, a topic for another day. But for me, it's just no one is above the law.
Right.
It's so important as a tenant of this country that no one is above the law. And it's finally good to say that maybe we're actually living up to one of our deals, not just talking. Remember, we talked, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation is just words if you don't act upon them.
Right.
You know, no one is above the law, just words if we don't treat it as such. So
that's correct.
I want to thank you so much, Wilbur Aldridge, for your intelligent conversation. This was just brilliant. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you for being here. I always enjoy coming. That's why I've never told you no, because it's really a time for me to get out some of the stuff that I may not say necessarily somewhere else, but this is a chance to get it out. And talking frankly is what I like to do, as long as truthful.
Well, that has to be one of the best commercials ever. I thank you so much, because that's really what it is about. I want people to come here, and I want them to be frank, too. So thank you so much, Mr. Aldridge. You will always be welcome here on Being Frank.
Thank you.
And, of course, thanks to our engineer, the mailman, Mr. Neil Richter. He's always driving the bus for us. Edits out all my many mistakes, so we appreciate that. And of course, special thanks to our listeners who take the time to give us a voice in their lives. Remember, we offer a fresh topic every week, and you can catch us wherever and whenever you get your favorite podcasts. Remember, that includes Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and all the others. You can also check us out on the Hudson River Radio Facebook page. Like us and give us a comment. It's public, so it's easy to do. We also ask you that you consider sharing Being Frank with others, especially if you like the programs. And as is my tradition, I'd like to leave you with two last little nuggets. One is from the poet laureate, Amanda Gorman, who says, "There is always light if we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it." Good words to live by. That's some really great music. John Selly on vocals, and Peter Danish does all the instruments. It's a terrific song, very appropriate for our show tonight. It's called The Age of Outrage. I'm your host, Frank Lobuono. This has been Being Frank, where the only way to be is Frank. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next week. Certainly hope so.
This is HudsonRiverRadio.com.